Thank you. So it's an incredible honor for me to be speaking at the same conference with many, perhaps most of my mathematical mentors and heroes. I have a hard time believing that everything that has happened to me is actually true. Often, I kind of have this feeling that in the back of my mind, someday the phone's going to ring, and it's going to be the turkey processing plant from my hometown in northern Wisconsin, and they're going to say, "Storm, you're in big trouble. You haven't been to work since 1994. you're going to have to make up all that time somehow." But I guess it's getting further and further away now, so I might actually get away with it. But yeah, it's an incredible pleasure to be here. So back when I was a grad student, I was at University of Michigan, which is, well, near here in Midwestern distance. And my girlfriend and I, we thought Toronto was the height of civilization. So we used to drive here and hang out. We took spring break to Toronto, which now that I live in Palo Alto seems mildly deranged. But we had a great time. No, I really loved Queen Street and hanging out down there. So I actually haven't done that yet, so I hope to go down there soon. Okay, so this talk is not exceptionally three-dimensional, and even worse, it's not even two-dimensional. So I hope you'll have some patience. So the goal of this talk is to explain the following theorem. So I'm going to write it all out so you know what you're getting into, and then I'll try and motivate. So probably most of the talk will be kind of the background and motivation. So for n at least 3, let M be a finite volume oriented Riemannian N manifold. Let Z G naught be an N dimensional, again oriented, finite volume, negatively curved, locally symmetric space. So if little f from M to Z is a proper map then so H of B, so this is the volume growth entropy, which I'll explain, to the N times the volume of MB is at least the degree of F times the entropy G naught to the N times the volume of Z naught, ZG naught, with equality implying little f is proper homotopic to a homothetic covering. Okay, so that's the goal, and I'm going to try and work through this. Okay, so the most important thing to point out is that for Z closed, this is the famous Besson-Courtois-Gallo theorem. So they proved exactly this. I'm not sure, depending when they proved it or when it was published, 94, something like that, 96. So it's exactly this with the assumption that all the manifolds involved are closed. And if, let's see how to say it. So So if any sort of mild assumption, say if the Ricci curvature of B is bounded below greater than or equal to something, then it's a theorem of Boland. I don't know if there are two L's or not. Connell and Soto. And in fact, we should ask Juan to make sure, but I don't think Ricci greater than or equal to something. I think if you have any sort of geometric knowledge of the manifold B, then you can make their argument work. So you just need to know that it has some sort of uniform geometry behavior. So the problem is, the only thing I'm contributing here is that, so one should imagine that MB is pretty awful. Is awful. So the IE, the int of the curvatures is minus infinity, the sup is plus infinity, you have infinite diameter ends with small injectivity radius, so lots of, you know, lots of null homotopic and trivial geodesics out the end. You know, just horrible. So if you have any sort of reasonable behavior for B, you can use Boland, Connell, Soto to do this. So in some sense, this is about ends of manifolds, but slightly different. So I mean, kind of the enemy is if you have an end on this guy that has some reasonable bits, and then it has tiny, tiny filaments, you know, connecting the reasonable bits, that get longer and longer and skinnier and skinnier. You know, you should imagine the end is kind of bad like that. So this is, the end is going out in some crazy way. And the curvature is going all over the place. And in fact, the M doesn't need to be topologically tamed. Though I don't know if there's any particularly interesting examples where you'd have a proper map. Okay, let's see. So let me go into what does some of this terminology mean to try and convince you that this is something mildly interesting. So Z, G naught is either, so a negatively curved locally symmetric space is either real hyperbolic, real complex, quaternionic, or Cayley hyperbolic. So it's just a fancy way to say that it's one of these things. Those are all the rank one. See, these are the rank one, negatively curved rank one symmetric spaces. And let's call this Hn over some field. And then Z, G naught, is equal to Hn over that field modulo some lattice where this is finite covolume. So this might not be the most exciting theorem just because all I'm doing is proving the cusp case of a really deep result. But somehow, at least in my defense, since the manifold, it's not just hyperbolic cusps, so the cusp can be, you know, on M can be any horrible thing you can imagine. So this requires maybe a little more work than just the normal cusp case for real hyperbolic manifolds. So the most important player, let me just say, so proper, just in case. So I said I have a proper map, it's proper, i.e., if you have a sequence, m sub I in the domain, and am I these every compact set? So then the image sequence does also. F of M I leaves every compact. So that's just what proper means. And when you have a proper map, even though these manifolds are non-compact, you can then define the degree. So the degree of F is defined as you expect. This is the, you know, oriented cardinality of a generic fiber again. So it works just like for compact manifolds under this properness assumption. Okay, so that brings me to the most important player in the formulation above, and that's the H's. So what are the H's? So for any old Riemannian manifold, this entropy, this is called the volume growth entropy of G, this is defined to be the, never remember, lim sup, as R goes to infinity, of 1 over R times the log of the volume of the ball in the universal cover, so the ball around some base point in the universal cover, radius R, inside X twiddle. Okay, so this is X twiddle. You just have some base point, and then you take larger and larger balls, and you look at how the volume grows. This is independent of the base point in this case, so the base point is irrelevant, is not important. So if you've never thought about this, let me just give a couple examples. So hypothetically, if the volume grew like k times e to the cr, then h of that would be c. Okay? So what this is really doing is it's picking out the exponent of growth if the volume is growing exponentially with base e. So hg is the exponent of volume growth. And for hyperbolic space, this is a nice exercise, is to prove that the volume growth entropy of hyperbolic space is n minus 1. And this is just how I would do it is using Jacobi fields. But there's probably slicker ways in this case. And the volume growth entropy of Euclidean space is, of course, 0, because the volume of a ball in Euclidean space grows polynomial, not exponentially. So these logs just kill everything off. And if you have some other kind of hyperbolic space, I should emphasize, over some other field, so this is a nice algebraic formula. I don't remember, but you can look it up. Nice algebraic formula in N and F. Okay, so one can find that out in finite time. And perhaps one final thing. So this, you know, what controls the growth of volume? Well, it's the Ricci curvature is somehow the important thing for volumes of balls. So you have this, I'm not sure who to say, Bishop Gromov, I suppose. So a comparison theorem . So if the Ricci curvature of G is bounded below by minus 1, then the volume growth entropy of G is at most the volume growth entropy of hyperbolic, I guess I didn't specify the dimension, but hyperbolic n space. So, this is an n manifold. So kind of intuitively, the way I imagine this is if you set off a stick of dynamite in your universal cover, and then it started spreading out in all directions, this volume growth entropy measures how quickly that explosion would dissipate, and you wouldn't really notice it anymore, in some sense. So this is related to older notions of entropy. So if there are any dynamicists still around, so the topological entropy, which I'll just call H top, of the geodesic flow of G is at least H of G with equality when G is cat zero. So I'm sorry, I wrote down who proved that. This is a theorem of, I'm not sure how to say that, Dinaberg, and then Manning. So the point of this sentence is, in, you know, if you don't like this, this is kind of an ad hoc notion of entropy. Well, topological entropy is perhaps better established, and you can go ahead and replace this volume growth entropy by topological entropy in the statement of the theorem, and it's still true. So you can use kind of the more common notion of entropy if you wish. Yes, yeah, and then it only goes up on the left. But I don't want to define that kind of entropy because I can never remember what it is. Yes, thank you. Yeah, it's complete. Right. So that's a good question considering I'm chopping away at hypotheses. So everything is complete. So both. Thanks. So one pesky feature, so unfortunately, H is not scale invariant. So that, it's mildly annoying. In fact, H, so if you multiply the Riemannian metric tensor by C squared, then H divides by that same factor. So remember, when you multiply a Riemannian metric by C squared, that means you're scaling the distances by C. So maybe it's less surprising, but then that pushes it down. So to fix this, so one defines the scale invariant quantity which I have over there. You take the volume growth entropy to the nth times the volume. And I'm not sure what this is called again, the normalized entropy or something. But it's the scale invariant version. So equivalently, one restricts attention to volume one spaces. That's often what's done in dynamics. H to the n, you mean? That's true. So, yeah, I mean, equivalently in the sense that you get the same order. Yeah, not exactly the same function. So this brings me to... Right. In fact, I won't do this, but this is how it's... Yeah, I probably won't. I'll do it a different, slightly different way. But I just wanted to state... It's the minimal entropy conjecture . So this is attributed to Katok, but I couldn't find it exactly in print, so he proved it in some special cases, but I'm assuming he made this conjecture just at a conference or something. and maybe he didn't. So let Z, well, let's use X again. XG be a non-positively curved finite volume 1 locally symmetric space and then I have to add a parenthetical remark, so assume that the isometry group of the universal cover has no center, trivial center, just to make this true. For any other volume 1 metric B on X, we have H of B strictly bigger than H of G. So here I'm assuming other in the strict sense of the word other. So this no trivial center, morally what this means is that you didn't just put a bunch of tori on X, because then it wouldn't be true anymore. So that's why you have to make this assumption. But as long as you didn't just put a bunch of direct product with a bunch of tori, then this minimal entropy conjecture, which this is proved here for negatively curved locally symmetric spaces, and you know by BCG, it should be true for the cat zero setting in general. So I think this is one of the premier conjectures in cat zero geometry right now, but I can't claim that there's anyone close to proving it. BCG have been working on it at least, for since they proved this for sure, but there's not a lot of ideas on how to approach these cat zero locally symmetric spaces. Right. So BCG proved this for X negatively curved. And it's open even for SLNR modulo SON modulo gamma. So that's probably the most interesting case. So I think, SL3R, I'm sure no one knows. Okay. So that's some of the background for this. I would like to spend the rest of the time, I'm not going to sketch out the proof of this because it involves a lot of, and not surprisingly, the majority of it paper-wise is mimicking the argument of BCG, so I would like to kind of run into a part of the proof that differs so I can focus on that and maybe just give you a sense of some of the ideas that, or the, some of the problems that you run into. So go, feel free, so for simplicity, one can assume that Z is real hyperbolic, and even a three-manifold, it's not any easier to do. And F is a diffeomorphism. Little f is a diffeomorphism. So then you're just imagining that you have two different metrics on the same space, and you're trying to show this inequality. So then the degree part goes away. It simplifies it conceptually a little bit. So as I pointed out somewhere, the volume growth entropy is not scale invariant. So if you scale the metric, the volume growth entropy changes. So without loss of generality, up to scaling, B, we may assume that the two volume growth entropies are the same. So now it's enough to show the volume of B is strictly bigger. So I'm assuming they're not isometric. Well, that's fine. Show the volume inequality, with equality implying F isotopic, and no, I'm sorry, homotopic to an isometry. Okay, so now it becomes a little more familiar maybe to things I've talked about before. Once you've scaled away this volume growth entropy, now it's just a question of volume, which is a lot easier, at least for me, to visualize. So we have to somehow, the goal is to prove that up to when you scale the volume growth entropies to agree, that whatever other metric you put on this locally symmetric space forces the volume to go up. So it makes it more intuitive, to me at least. Okay, so I won't go into much detail on how the inequality arises, not because I think it's probably the meat of the proof, but it would take too long to get anywhere. So more or less, I'll skip the inequality. So let me just say two lines what happens. And so what Besson-Courtois give you, so build a map F sub C for all C greater than this entropy so that F sub C between the two manifolds, M to Z, is homotopic to little f, and the Jacobian of big F sub C is bounded by 1 plus some error term that goes to 0. So that the error goes to 0 as the C goes down to the entropy. Okay? So I'm not going to go into this at all. This is kind of a map that is defined using Patterson-Sullivan theory and some dynamics. Well, I call it dynamics, but Brian Acroft told me that it's not dynamics, so I'm not allowed to call it that anymore. But geometry, according to dynamicists, it's geometry, to get this map, which is called the barycenter map. In some sense, it's something like a center of mass, so that's a gross simplification. But this thing has one nice property, is that it locally it's Jacobian, I should say. No, that's true. Locally, its Jacobian is bounded above by something just a little bit bigger than 1. And then you're going to take this constant C down to the volume growth entropy, and you just push this thing down to 1 if it was what you want to do. So what in the closed case, well, that gives you the inequality right there. So in the closed case, change of variables says immediately that the volume of B is at least the volume of the target, just because we have this bound on the Jacobian that's arbitrarily good. But in the open case, so in our setting, the problem is that F of sub C may not be proper. So in fact, the image, for all you know, F sub C of the entire manifold M may be a tiny neighborhood of some lower dimensional skeleton of an n minus 1 skeleton. so the picture, so I imagine B is some terrible thing. Here's M. We have our maps, F sub C, and here's our beautiful hyperbolic manifold we're trying to map everything into. But for some reason, this whole end gets kind of wrapped up down inside here. So you're missing the whole end. And so you can't apply the change of variables theorem anymore, because somehow the whole thing, even though Jacobian's less than one, so what? It sucked all inside the guts of the manifold. So you can't really conclude anything. So, you know, when I worked on this for a long time, I tried. So what Bull and Connell Soto do is they come up with beautiful arguments which kind of force this map to go out the end under, you know, any kind of reasonably mild assumption on the geometry of the domain. I'm sorry, go out the end of Z under mild geometric assumption. And I was spend a lot of time trying to force this map to be proper in general. And actually, I've never figured out if I did or not, but I came up with a trick that kind of sidesteps the issue, so that I'm not going to explain. So here's a trick, which moves this question into calibration theory in Hilbert space. So if you know some of the proof, that maybe says epsilon to you. Otherwise, it's kind of just a throwaway remark. But at the end of the day, we sidestep this whole problem of non-properness, and in fact, you can extract the inequality kind of using Stokes' theorem in Hilbert space. So that's all I'm going to say about the inequality. I'm going to focus instead on the rigidity case, and I'll go into a little bit more detail there. Okay, so I'm going to focus on the case when the volumes are equal. So the goal is to show MB is isometric to the locally symmetric space. Okay, so even here I'm going to have to kind of tell you what you get from the existing theory. So using standard techniques, and this, of course, our hypothesis that the volumes are equal, one shows that the sequence F sub C, maybe for some subsequence, so here C sub I descends down to the entropy, converges in a compact open sense to a one Lipschitz map, big F. So there is some limit. So this is just following the argument in their paper. You can kind of argue locally to show that the sequence of BCG maps converges in a compact open sense to a one Lipschitz map. So now you have some one Lipschitz map from the left side to the right side, and you'd like to show that this guy is actually an isometry. So if the end of the domain has any sort of reasonable structure, this should be enough, right? Like if you have nice short essential curves, well, they can't get stretched way out down into the interior of the range. So if you have something kind of to hang on to in the end of M, then this should help a lot. But if you don't know anything about the geometry, then this isn't quite enough to force the map to be proper. So we'd like to show that this map is an isometry, and I'm going to use an analysis to help me here. And I'm going to use, so the goal is to use Reshetnyak's theorem. Actually, a very special case of Reshetnyak's theorem. I'm worried with Mario here that you're going to know it's not really Reshetnyak's theorem. That if we can show that the Jacobian of F is 1 almost everywhere, then F is a local isometry. So it's a kind of a local result. And then being a local isometry is enough, because then you're done. Then you know that the domain is also a locally symmetric space of the same kind, and then this one Lipschitz property is enough to kind of force the ends out the ends, because you have nice short curves. So this also, BCG reproved enough of Reshetnyak's theorem without knowing its existence in their paper. So in fact, you could extract this from BCG's work too. Nope, we just assume it's one Lipschitz. Yeah. When it's Lipschitz, a locally Lipschitz map is differentiable almost everywhere, and then we're just taking that all those points. So this theorem might be mildly surprising, because you're imagining branch covers. But branch covers, in fact, can't have these properties unless you have a cone angle, you know, 4 pi cone angle, some multiple of 2 pi cone angle around the singularity. So this kind of Jacobian of F, so you have to think about it for a while. If you take a branch cover in R3 wrapping around a geodesic, you have to think about why you couldn't. You can only force the Jacobian so close to 1 if it's 1 Lipschitz. You're going to have to distort something somewhere. And in fact, Reshetnyak has a gap, so he's not this sharp. He allows, there's some constant so that, you know, if the Jacobian is close to 1, then you still get a local homeomorphism. So this is kind of just an easy case of this theorem. So this is the goal, is to show that the Jacobian of F is 1 almost everywhere. No, the error is uniform. Yeah, the error is just a formula you could write down. Okay, so suppose our goal is false. So I'm going to draw another picture. Okay, so this is M, this is Z. So the goal is false, so this map is not Jacobian 1 almost everywhere. So then, there exists some compact set, K. So there exists compact K in the domain, such that the volume of the image of K. I'm going to be a little sloppy about what all these volumes mean, so let's just free our minds, because I don't want to write down pullbacks and integrals all over the place. So if the Jacobian is not 1 almost everywhere, then it's strictly less than 1, so it's less than C less than 1 on some positive measure set. So that's lemma minus 2 in measure theory. So I can find some compact set where the map is shrinks by a definite amount, by some gap. Okay, so I'm going to fix this gap. And then, I can make this K as big as I want, and the gap gets only worse because it's one Lipschitz. So for any bigger set L, I still have this gap. By this fact that it's one Lipschitz. Using a drop of analysis, we can pick some I'm going to use K again. Our compact set K containing M, so that we have the area of the boundary of K is very small, much, much less than the gap. Okay, so I can use a little bit of analysis, you know, co-area formula, really. So this thing has finite volume, so I can choose slices so that the area is as small as I want. So I'm going to wait a while and choose my compact set all the way out to here. So here's my new boundary of K, and I can wait until that boundary of K is much, much less than my gap. Okay? That the volume of M minus the volume of K is much, much less than my gap. Okay, so the volume left over that I'm not counting for is much smaller than my gap. And F, little f, sends the boundary of K into the cusp of Z. So little f, remember, is proper. So if I wait long enough, little f will send this boundary into the cusps. So if the cusps start here, if I wait long enough, little f will send this boundary deep into the cusp. Okay. So the problem f, big F of the boundary of K, may not be in the cusps of Z. Okay, so that's the crux of the problem, is this failure of the map big F may not be proper. It may take this boundary of K and it might stuff it down inside here. So here's big F of the boundary of K. So this is somehow an unavoidable problem that we're going to get around. Okay, we're almost there. It's my last page. All right. So what do we have? We imagine that we've picked this compact submanifold with tiny boundary that's way out the end, and at least topologically lives in the cusps of the image. Okay? But now geometrically it gets stuffed down into the guts. So we know that little f restricted to the boundary of K is homotopic to big F restricted to the boundary of K. So there exists a lift . So I'm going to go to the covering space of Z given by the cusp group. So the cusp group of Z. Okay, so this is just some cusp, infinite volume cusp. Oh, and these pictures all, I'm assuming that we have one end just for simplicity. It doesn't really make anything harder but the notation. So I know that little f and big F are homotopic, so that means I can lift this map downstairs up. Into the cusp group. So the cusp group, well, my covering space will be below, I apologize, but I have some cusp space. This is HN modulo some cusp group. Okay. So this is a donut. And I have, somewhere in this space, I can lift. So I have F twiddle restricted. Of the boundary of K living inside of there. So then geometric fact, there exists a map cone, so I can take the cone of this lift. So the notation's a little out of hand, but I didn't want to make too many letters. So I take the boundary of K across array, and I can map this into HN modulo my cusp group. So this map is the obvious thing. Here's my lift, and now I just attach a geodesic ray to each curve going straight out that cusp, or to each point going straight out that cusp. And more, even more importantly, the volume of the image is less than or equal to some dimensional constant times the volume of the base. Which, remember, is much, much less than the gap. Okay? And this cone is proper. Okay? So this is the key point. So hopefully I couldn't emphasize this enough. If you've lifted, so you have this little teeny thing out the end, you lift it up to the cusp group, and then you cone it off. Okay, so the cone might not be so obvious down here because you don't know how to get out of the core. But up here, it's more clear. You just cone off. Well, now, let me put it here so I don't have to move all the way over. So now glue F restricted to K to pi composed with the cone of F twiddle, the lift. So this pi is just the covering map, isometric covering map, along the boundary of K to obtain a proper map G from M that's not quite right. G from some modification of M to Z. Okay, so what did I do? I took M and I chopped off the grody end at some point, and I tack on, boundary K cross array, and now I map that thing over to Z. Does this make sense? So there's kind of a lot of notation. So we're almost there. Now we're just going to chuck away big F, and we're going to keep this guy G. So this guy's proper, so now we can do change of variables. Let me do it here. So there's a little topological lemma. Is that degree of G equals the degree of big F. So that just follows that if you're talking about the degree of maps between compact manifolds with boundary, the degree is just given by the degree of the boundary map. So here we have this boundary map, and we just change it outside the compact set. So the degree can't change because you're still wrapping around the end in the same way. So this is just kind of a long exact sequence on homology type thing. So then, change of variables says that the volume of Z is the volume of the image of G. So this is the change of variable, or this thing is degree 1, because it's homotopic to a diffeomorphism, properly. I mean, it's degree 1. That's all you need. Which is equal to, now we break this thing up, this is equal to the volume of F of K. So again, free your mind a little bit about what these, we're talking about pulling back and integrating in the domain, plus the volume of the cone . Okay, so this map is 1 Lipschitz, so it's less than the volume of K. We defined K so that we have, this is strictly less than the volume of K minus the gap, plus something much less than the gap. Okay, so this volume of this cone is much less than the gap. That was the whole point of its definition. And so you get something strictly less than the volume of K, which is less than the volume of Z. And that's what we started with. So, contradiction. Okay. So therefore, the Jacobian of F is 1 almost everywhere. All right, so then I guess I've erased it. But once you know this map is Jacobian 1 almost everywhere, you apply this theorem, Reshetnik's theorem, which tells you that it's a local isometry, and then it's pretty easy. So now it's a one Lipschitz local isometry between negatively curved locally symmetric spaces. So it has to be proper because it takes the short curves in the ends, the short curves in the ends. And that tells you that it actually is an isometry. It's a degree one covering map. So, well, thank you for persevering through this. It gets a little technical, so thanks for listening. Oh, well, I kind of pushed it away. So, I mean, I scale the spaces so the entropy is the same. But so the entropy is used, so it's the volume of a ball, it's the growth of volume of balls. And to define this map, you need to pick functions that are in L2 of the universal cover. So you need to know how fast that volume is growing. Yes. So, it's crucially involved in what I haven't said anything about. So I apologize for that. Yeah.
Also, what is it about the construction that lets you convert Jacobian degree to one? That's part of the
DC. Right. So they have more than just this Jacobian. I mean, they control the eigenvalues of the derivative, and they have a series of estimates which are kind of the core of it, We say that not only are the eigenvalues bounded, but they're all very close to each other and getting close to each other as you take this limit. So all the eigenvalues are going to 1, so the Jacobian is converging to 1. So that's kind of the hardest part of the argument, which I don't do anything. I just black box that. And I don't have to do anything clever there.
And
it does. They do it globally, but you can do it on little convex balls. So you take little convex balls in the domain and you redo their argument on each convex ball. And then you glue the whole thing together. So you get the map to converge on little convex balls. And then you glue all these convex balls together to get a global map. That's one Lipschitz. So I'm not expecting that to sound convincing. Courtois believes it. yeah. Juan? I'm sorry, I can't hear you. If what is true? Well, isn't that the Katok's theorem? Oh. I don't know. I would ask Katov. I would ask you.
Or any other questions? Thank you
again. So the first thing they do is they do establish it's L Lipschitz for some L, where L depends on nothing. And then you can start to take limits, like you can do Arzelà-Scholy. So, I mean, the first step before you get one is you just get that they're L Lipschitz.
These F sub
C's. Yeah, F sub C's are L Lipschitz.
So this is just Barry Center.
Yeah, yeah. And then this L Lipschitz means that you can...
global, no matter what, without any assumptions on
it. That there is some L, yeah. The L might depend on everything, but there's one L for everything. Once you've
somehow the point is that the unbounded geometry part of M does because you assume
you assume the entropies are the same, so you can't kind of.
There's not that much. That's the point.
Yeah. 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 So they get a bound kind of on the eigenvalues just in terms of the entropy of the domain.